Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, welcome to Blog Talk Radio, and this is Trundlebed Tales.
Hello,
Sarah? Barbara.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi. I'm actually guys a little late calling you, so I am on air. So I'm just going to ask you to hold on for just a minute.
Sure.
Okay. Well, hello everybody, and as you just heard, this was not a good night for me to pick. I kind of scheduled it poorly because I ended up having to work tonight, so I am just about out of breath because I just got things set up and I was a little late calling Barbara, but I think we're going to have a good show anyway. I want to remind everybody, if you want to call in with a question or if you just are out and about listening, you can do that at 1-714-242-5253. That's 1-714-242-5253. And there's also a toll-free number. That's 1-877-633-9389. That's 1-877-633-9389. And before we get started, I just have a few housekeeping chores. And I just want to remind everybody that this has been a busy month for Trundlebed Tales Radio. I hope you get a chance to listen to all the episodes. June's going to be a little bit different because I'm going to be making a couple of Laura trips instead of having me do a single big speech near the beginning of the month. I'm going to be doing a few shorter segments reporting on the different Laura trips I'm taking. And it looks like the person we're going to have interview, though I don't have a firm date for you yet, is actually going to be talking about making hay. So if you wondered how that fit into the book, you'll get all the details there. And I think that's about all the housekeeping that I have for tonight. So we're going to jump right back into our subject for tonight, which is Nancy Drew. And I just want to let everybody know that while I'm a little out of breath, I am wearing my most Nancy Drew-esque shirt that I have. It's just like one off of one of the 1960s covers. And I wanted to mention just a little bit about one of the things in Nancy's memory box, which is a cameo ring that she got in the book The Ghost of Blackwood Hall, which is actually one of the books that Mildred Wirt Benson mentioned or wrote. And, well, that part's true. She did write the story, and Nancy does get a cameo ring in it, and I wear a cameo ring. It's actually my mom's is why I wear it. But the thing that I really did get from Nancy Drew is that it's one of the three best pieces of advice that I have gotten out of a book ever, and that is always keep a packed overnight bag complete with swimsuit in the trunk of your car. And that has gotten me out of more jams than I care to remember. So listen to Nancy Drew and always keep an overnight bag. Now I'm going to go ahead and bring our guest for tonight on the air. Hello, Barbara.
Hello, it's fun to be on the air with the woman who brought Laura Ingalls Wilder to us.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad that you agreed to it because I just love hearing you talk about Nancy Drew. I think you know even more about her than I know about Laura. So I'm so glad that you were willing to do this.
Well, as it happens, there was a survey in 2007, and they asked people around the United States, what was the book that hooked you and made you a reader? And number one, 93,000 people answered. And number one was Nancy Drew, The Secret of the Old Clock. And number three was Laura Ingalls Wilder, Little House on the Prairie.
Well, I'm not really surprised, because I think most girls who'd like one would like the other, because they're both about funky girls with their own mind.
Exactly.
Well, for those of out in the viewing audience or listening audience who don't know who you are, why don't you just introduce yourself, Barbara, and tell us just a little bit about you.
Well, I'm a native Iowan, like Nancy's author, Mildred Augustine, and I like to think that Nancy Drew was an Iowan too. And so I grew up reading and loving Nancy Drew, and was lucky enough to get a job at the University of Northern Iowa teaching English. And so I began teaching about Midwestern literature, and was surprised to learn very late, you know, in the 1980s, that actually the woman who wrote, you know, 23 of the first 30 Nancy Drew mysteries was from Iowa. And so I thought, I wish I would have learned this in my public library or at school. I think it would have encouraged me no end in terms of the possibilities for female Iowans. And so I've begun kind of go around the state and try to help people know, because it's kind of a mystery or a carefully guarded secret that the real women, oh, that Nancy Drew is an Iowan, and that one of her beginning authors was an Iowan too.
Well, they certainly do keep it quiet, and it isn't really surprising, though, because there is a lot of good literature that comes out of Iowa, and I certainly think so, and I'm not surprised at all to know that Nancy is an Iowan, except that when they redid the books, they kind of tried to make them more in the Midwest.
Exactly.
In North New England.
Well, and you tell me, Sarah, what you think in the first volume that Mildred Augustine, who came from Ladora, Iowa, the first volume, The Secret of the Old Clock, she says this: "Like a true daughter of the Middle West, Nancy Drew took pride in the fertility of her state and saw beauty in a crop of waving green corn as well as in the rolling hills and the expanse of prairie land." They never use the word Iowa, but if you've ever been to Ladora, Mildred Augustine's house, where she wrote that book, is on Highway 6 going by. Right out her window, she could see the green corn rolling. So I feel sure she was thinking that her heroine was an Iowan like herself.
Well, that does sound pretty conclusive. I mean, that does sound exactly like Iowa.
Right, but you're absolutely right. In the 1950s, you know, she first came out in the Depression in 1930, but when they, she was so popular that when they redid them in the 1950s, they shortened them down and dumbed them down, and they also changed the blue roadster to a blue Mustang convertible. You know, they kind of updated some things, but they also shortened them and dumbed them down, which is why a lot of people remember with fondness the blue-covered Nancys, the original ones that Mildred Augustine wrote. And when they shortened them, they cut out lines like the one I just read to you. And so that's one of the reasons that people who love Nancy Drew say, "My gosh, I kind of knew she was from the Midwest." And, of course, I think Mildred Augustine was thinking of Iowa.
Well, I would think she would, since that's what she knew best. And after all, for all you non-Iowans out there, Iowa, well, it doesn't really, but we like to say Iowa means beautiful land.
Right.
Okay, well, I think anybody listening tonight would probably know who Nancy Drew is, but in case there's anybody who just stumbled on this or who is a Laura fan that somehow managed not to read any Nancy Drew books, how would you describe Nancy Drew?
Well, Nancy Drew, for me, when I was reading her when I was 9 or 10, she was brave, she was smart, she was kind. She really, some people have said she had it all. One scholar has written that, and it that, of course, in the 1930s, there weren't as many roles open to women as there are today, and that Mildred Augustine's genius, really, was to make Nancy Drew a blend of the three acceptable roles for women at that time. And what she meant by that is, you know, back then you could be what they called the beautiful charmer, you know, if you could pull it off, or maybe you were the outdoor girl, you know, the tomboy, or you were the New England brain, you know, think Katharine Hepburn. And so Nancy, when you think about it, she was pretty, she was athletic, the outdoor girl, and she was smart. She had it all. And so there were so many reasons where I think young girls admired her. You know, one was the blue roadster. How exciting was that? She had her own roadster. She didn't have a mom, which I think kind of made her exciting. And so she had a lot of independence and would drive around and was very adventurous and brave. And I have to tell you, Sarah, that you and I weren't the only ones who were taken with Nancy Drew. A number of very famous women, Barbara Walters, the opera singer Beverly Sills, Demi Moore, the actress, and if you can believe it, all three women Supreme Court justices, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Sonia Sotomayor, and Ellen Kagan, all of these women have said that reading Nancy Drew as a young girl spurred them on to achievement by having her as such a positive role model. So I think she was just a wonderful role model for girls, and she still is today, which may be part of the secret of her success.
I think that is true. I mean, I read a lot of my grandmother's books when I was growing up, from when she was a girl, and I really think that you get the books that she was reading were a lot better than the ones that were coming out when I was little, because the ones that she had were about girls doing stuff. Nancy Drew and the Dana Girls solving mysteries, Dorothy Dixon earns her wings, Helen in the Editor's Chair, and the books that came out when I was that age were like, this is how you get a boy. And it was like, yeah, I don't care. And
exactly. And Nancy Drew could do anything. She could fix change a tire. She could fix a boat engine. She was a great golfer. And whenever a mystery needed to be solved, everyone turned to her because she knew how to solve the mystery. Even Ned Nickerson, her boyfriend, you know, even Ned Nickerson's friends, because she was a natural leader. So she was... And she was kind, and she was modest, which I think is a very Midwest quality. And so it was hard not to admire and want to be Nancy Drew, as I think I did.
Yeah, I think a lot of girls grew up wanting to be Nancy Drew. Well,
and one of the fun things about going around this state in the Midwest and talking about Nancy Drew is I often find I have four generations of women and sometimes some men in the room, and so there'll be like 8 to 12 year olds who are just discovering her right now, but then their moms and their great grandmas who maybe first started reading the blue ones. And I've even had some men say that they come and they love Nancy Drew, and I even some a man out in Council Bluffs told me that he and his brother so liked Nancy Drew when they were going on the train to New York with their family. They were traveling, and they didn't want people to see that they were so, you know, obsessed with Nancy Drew, so they used brown paper wrappers. But they loved Nancy Drew too, and I think some boys did too.
Well, you know, there really are just some books that stand the test of time all on their own. And I think Laura's books, I think the Nancy Drew books, Lucy Maud Montgomery, it's a select list, but some of them don't need college literature instructors insisting people buy them to keep them in print.
And as you said about Laura, she and Nancy and, yes, Anna Green Gables, so independent girls, right, who are forging their own way, and that's inspiring.
Well, let's back up just a little bit, because Nancy Drew is one of those things that were long hated in library world series books. So I wanted to talk just a little bit about the history of series books and kind of how they changed. And I think probably the most popular series book in the 19th century was Horatio Alger, and that has some connections to the Nancy Drew Hardy Boys books.
Yes, in fact, Horatio Alger Jr. was a good friend and kind of a mentor to Edward Stratemeyer, who really is the father of all these famous adventure series like Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys and the Rover Boys and the Bobbsey Twins in the 1900s. But Horatio Alger, and most people associate their Horatio Alger books. I mean, their titles are so wonderful. I've collected some. They're like Tried and True, Strive and Succeed. The basic, if you ask someone, you know, what's the basic story of a Horatio Alger story, it's, you know, poor boy, works hard, and then you can probably finish the the equation, you know, does well, right, is successful.
Right, does
so,
well.
But these were boys, you know, slow and sure, tried and true. So they, many people think they really helped, excuse me?
Frank and Fearless, that was the one.
Right. Well, they helped really inspire the American dream. You know, they fostered the American dream, because if you were poor but you worked hard, kind of like Ben Franklin, you could, in all the books, the Horatio Alger characters did well. But they were boys. Well, Edward Stratemeyer learned a lot from his good friend Horatio Alger Jr., and he set up in about 1906 what he called the Stratemeyer Syndicate, and it was basically a fiction factory for young people's adventure stories. And so Stratemeyer was a genius, there's no question about it. Lived in New Jersey, and he just had the ability to come up with all, he created 60 of these adventure stories, like the Dana Girls and the Bobbsey Twins and the Rover Boys and Tom Swift. And but he came up with an ingenious method of working, and he would come up with the kind of the idea for a series, and then he would write, you know, brief plot outlines for the Hardy Boys, which he created in 1927. But then he would give these brief plot outlines, you know, 2, 3, 4 pages, to hired ghostwriters who would then, you know, actually write the books themselves from these plot outlines. And then Stratemeyer would edit them and publish them. And the ghostwriters were paid, for example, our Iowa writer Mildred Augustine was paid $125 for each manuscript. But the Stratemeyer Syndicate held the copyright to all the books and collected all the royalties. And so these hired ghostwriters signed contracts of secrecy, pledging they would not reveal they were the real authors. And so these honorable hired ghostwriters, including Mildred Augustine, kept their pledges of secrecy even when it became clear that Nancy Drew was selling 2 million copies a year. So that's how kind of Nancy Drew became famous, but her Iowa author was a secret for more than 50 years.
Well, before we go on with Nancy, I wanted to take one more little step back and talk just a minute about Ruth Fielding, who was another series that Mildred was involved with.
Right, and even before we get to that, I meant to say, because you were talking about how series books weren't, weren't very popular in libraries, and I ran across an amazing article in 1927, and as a librarian yourself, I know you know all this, but it just fascinated me. Here, people thought in the early part of the 1900s that somehow series books weren't good for young readers, and I ran across an article by the head librarian of the Boy Scouts of America, and he said in 1927 in an article that went all over the nation and to librarians, it said, if your child reads a series book, his brain will explode. His brain will explode. And what's so funny is that how now we have completely the opposite a view of series books. And there was a wonderful survey, I think, in the 1970s and 80s, and they asked people across the North America, what made people who I'd called themselves lifelong readers, and they said, well, what made you someone who's a lifelong reader? And over again, they said it was reading a series book like, The Hardy Boys or Nancy Drew or, whatever. And so now we know, and maybe we should have figured it out back then, that these series books really help readers learn how to read. Maybe you should say something about that, Sarah.
Well, it really, reading anything is shown to be good for your reading process, because you need to be, a lot of times they'll focus on people who are having trouble reading and what they call high interest, low ability books. And even though they aren't, the most strenuous thing that they could read, if you read enough of them, you build a skill to not have to struggle over each single word, but to kind of get a reading flow developed. And that's what you really need. You're never going to read anything very complicated if you don't have that kind of reading flow. And if people are interested in a series, they'll quite often have to read the entire thing, and that keeps them reading, and it really has proved valuable. In fact, I think the Harry Potter books, which are in essence a series, are sort of being hailed as the savior of reading, getting kids to read big books again.
Exactly, and they learn the conventions, right, of mysteries, and you can't help but notice each Nancy Drew mystery, you can read it, and nothing horrible is going to happen. You have a sense it's going to turn all out all right in the end, but along the way you learn all the conventions of detective stories, and so you have to learn it somehow, right? And the series books are a great way to learn about the conventions of books. Shall I say a little bit about Ruth Fielding?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, well, I should say, Mildred Augustine, who was born in Ladore, Iowa in 1905, put many of her own characteristics into the Nancy Drew books. And Mildred herself really started out, she had brains and daring, just like Nancy Drew. And she started off as an academic pioneer. And she was the first woman, if you can believe it, to earn a bachelor's degree in journalism from the University of Iowa's New School of Journalism. This was 1925. She was 20, and she was the first person, male or female, to earn a master's degree from the journalism school. So she's an academic pioneer first, but when she was 20, after getting her bachelor's degree in 1925 from the University of Iowa School of Journalism, she boards a train to New York City to meet Edward Stratemeyer, who had advertised for ghostwriters for a syndicate. Well, she meets him, takes the train back, and the first book she writes for him is called Ruth Fielding and Her Great Scenario. And little did she know, she was about to embark on a great scenario in American popular culture all her own. And are you a fan of Ruth Fielding by any chance?
Well, I have been slowly working on gathering the series, but I don't have anywhere near all of them.
Well, and I think Mildred Augustine wrote four of them. I mean, she started out writing Ruth Fielding, but then in 1929, Stratemeyer mailed Mildred Augustine a plot outline for a new teen sleuth named Nancy Drew. And as I mentioned before, in 1927, Stratemeyer had come up with the Hardy Boys, and they had proved such popular teen detectives that Stratemeyer thought America was ready. We were ready for a female counterpart. And so he sent Mildred just a brief plot outline for the first Nancy Drew mystery. And she wrote it in her parents' home on Highway 6 in Ladora. And she wrote it in 2 months. And this is the historic first Nancy Drew mystery, which is The Secret of the Old Clock. Is that one of your favorites by chance?
Well, I do like The Secret of the Old Clock. And I think especially if you read it in the original version, because I think that in Mildred's version, it is such a product of the Depression. I mean, it's so heavily in there. You've got the impoverished gentry and, you know, people looking for sort of a miracle by finding the secret that was hidden in the old clock. And then it was such an ingenious hiding place. I wonder if people started hiding things in clocks after that or if they had to quit.
Exactly. And some people have said that one of the reasons she was so popular was that she was a brilliant response to her time, which was the Great Depression, you know, because when you think about it, Nancy's role in a lot of the mysteries is kind of that of a female Robin Hood and restoring inheritances as she does in The Secret of the Old Clock and lost items to worthy people in distress. And when you think about it, that's probably what that's how a lot of her readers thought of themselves at that time, that they were worthy people in distress who had lost their inheritances, you know, like their bank accounts. And so that may be one of the reasons she was so successful. But then, of course, she had that independence, bravery, and blue roadster, too.
Well, I want to just take a minute here and give the call numbers again in case anybody's out there wants to call in and ask a question. You can call 1-714-242-5253 or toll-free 1-877-633-9389. And I want to apologize that I don't know what's going on, but I can't get the chat room to open tonight. So if you were hoping to chat, isn't happening tonight, and I'm sorry about that. And I also want to make sure that people know if you are watching a stream on the website either now or later, they have a function now there where there's a little slideshow, so I pulled out my Nancy Drew photos, so I've got a couple pictures from a display that the Hoover Presidential Library had a few years ago that had a display about both Mildred Wirt Benson and about Laura Ingalls Wilder. And there's pictures of that. There's also a picture of a 1930 Roadster that I got down at Old Thrasher's. I went through and read all the little plaques till I found one that would be the closest to what Nancy had. Mm-hmm. And there's also a picture of a statue from down in Louisiana, actually, when I was there, because I thought it looked just like the cover of the Whispering Statue. So you can enjoy looking at those sometime. Okay. We were talking about, let's see, we've gotten as far as, she turned out this first book that was about a wonderful heroine in Iowa, and then what happened?
Well, what's fascinating is that Mildred Augustine said that when she sent her first manuscript to Edward Stratemeyer back in New Jersey, she told an interviewer that he was not pleased. he thought that Nancy Drew was, what he said, was too flip. And I wish some of your listeners would explain to me what he might have meant by that in 1930. But he told Mildred he thought Nancy was too flip and would not succeed. Well, luckily, the publishers for the Stratemeyer Syndicate, which was Grosset and Dunlap, they disagreed with him, and they ordered two more Nancy Drew mysteries for the spring of 1930 as test or breeder volumes, as they were called. And these were the second one, which is my favorite, which is The Hidden Staircase. Is that one of your favorites?
And, actually, I have a long-held desire to have a secret panel somewhere in my house.
Exactly. I was just fascinated with The Hidden Staircase. And then the third was The Bungalow Mystery. And
such a great word. I just love bungalow. I had never heard of bungalow until I read that book, and I was like, I love that.
Didn't you love the word chums for her friends?
Oh, yes.
Her chums, Bess and George, that she, there are so many good words in those original blue books, and those are the ones that Mildred Augustine wrote. But anyway, the story continues because Nancy Drew was immediately popular across the nation, and so Stratemeyer sent Mildred the fourth Nancy Drew mystery, which is The Mystery of the Lilac Inn. And that was the last book she wrote for the syndicate before Edward Stratemeyer died. It turns out that Nancy Drew, if you can believe it, was Edward Stratemeyer's last and greatest brainchild. Well, so Edward Stratemeyer dies, you know, it's 1930, Mildred Augustine has written the first four Nancy Drew mysteries, and Edward Stratemeyer's daughter, Harriet, takes over the syndicate, and she becomes almost obsessive in her proprietary feelings about Nancy Drew. Nancy Drew was so popular immediately, as I mentioned, and Harriet somehow thought of Nancy as her own daughter. She said, my daughter, Nancy Drew. She just, you know, was possessive about her. And so for the next 50 years, Harriet let everyone think that she was Carolyn Keene. You know, that was the pen name on all the Nancy Drew books. You know, there is no Carolyn Keene, but they all say, you know, by Carolyn Keene. So Harriet Stratemeyer even had stationery printed up. She would answer letters. You know, she told people she was Carolyn Keene, and Mildred Augustine had signed a contract of secrecy. So, but I have to tell you, and this is for your Iowa readers, that Mildred Augustine did have her standards. In 1934, Harriet said to Mildred that because of the Depression, she would have to lower her fee from $125 per manuscript to $100 per manuscript. Well, Augustine refused to work for those reduced wages. And by then she'd written the first seven Nancy Drew mysteries. And so now we know that Nancy Drew mysteries 8, 9, and 10 were written by a man named Walter Keurig. But Harriet Stratemeyer Adams didn't like particularly the way he wrote, didn't think he wrote as well as Mildred Augustine, and so she returned to Mildred in 1934, and for the next 14 years, Mildred Augustine wrote the Nancy Drew books, and the one you mentioned at the start, The Ghost of Blackwood Hall, was the last one she wrote in 1948, so it's really correct to say that after creating the character and personality of Nancy Drew. And Mildred said that in those first three Nancy Drew mysteries, she really worked hard on Nancy's character, trying to make her a departure from the typical, stereotypical girl heroines of her day. And Augustine said she thought those girls were too silly. So she tried to make Nancy Drew intelligent, agile, and resourceful. And clearly she was onto something because, you know, Nancy Drew was just a great success. But there's kind of a tension over the years between Harriet Stratemeyer Adams, who took the credit and made most of the money, and Mildred Augustine, the Midwestern writer who wrote 23 of the first 30 and got $125 per volume.
Yes, and if anybody is interested, I have on my blog at trundlebedtales.wordpress.com a post that has a list of all of those 23 titles. So if anybody is interested, you can go and find it there.
Oh, good. And be sure, I always try to tell people, get the blue-covered Nancys, because in the 1950s, they turned out those yellow ones that were shorter. And they're the same titles, but they're shorter. So look for those blue-covered. And also, people who are collectors, I should tell people if you're rummaging in your attic or if you're at a garage sale or antique shop, I don't know if you remember the famous Nancy Drew silhouette on the cover. She's got a magnifying glass. And well, for the first 16 years, from 1930 to 1946, if you look at that silhouette on the cover, Nancy has a scarf around her neck, you can see, and under her feet is a shadow on the silhouette. Well, for some reason or other, after 1946, Grosset and Dunlap, they kept the silhouette, but they took off the handkerchief and the shadow on her feet. And so people who have, so if you're looking and find a lovely blue copy, look at the silhouette. And if you've got the scarf around her neck and the shadow, you've got one that's really worth something, and you know, you've got one of the early ones, and so it's probably worth more than some of the later ones. I have a whole collection, and I have very few that have the scarf and the shadow.
Well, I do want to point out for everybody, too, if you aren't a collector and you just want to read the original books, most of the early ones, anyway, have been reprinted by Applewood Books in their original format, so collectors don't care, but people who are actually just Nancy Drew fans and want to read Nancy Drew how she originally was, you can find those at the Applewood Books website, and many places, bookstores, sell them too.
And the beauty of those is that some people love those wonderful black and white drawings that went with them. And they're there in the Applewood editions, and often they'll have an introduction by a current mystery writer. So, like, Sarah Paretsky introduces The Secret of the Old Clock. So they're kind of special. They're the old, but then they often have a great introduction by a contemporary mystery writer.
So, as we were talking about that, Mildred put a lot of herself into Nancy, did she put much of Iowa in the book? We talked about general descriptions, but is there any place we can point to that is in Iowa that shows up in one of the early Nancy Drew books?
Well, you know, the town where she's from is called River Heights, and when I've been up in the Mason City area, they tell me there was a section of Mason City that was called River Heights, so they kind of like to think they could claim a bit. And but if I actually have, and this is in a wonderful book called The Nancy Drew Scrapbook by Karen Plunkett Powell, she a woman has tried to draw a map of River Heights and showing Nancy's home and everything, and the river that goes through it is called the Muskoka River. And we do know, and this is, I think, in the clue in the crumbling wall, that mystery seems to be set on the Mississippi, and it involves buttons and pearls, and you just feel like she's maybe using some of the scenes she knows. Mildred Augustine, of course, went to the University of Iowa and loved to swim. And if you remember the bungalow mystery at all, that's the third mystery. At that time, this was 1930, Mildred Augustine herself was a swimming instructor in Iowa City. She'd love to jump off the bridge into the Iowa River. But in the bungalow mystery, Nancy Drew teaches her friend Helen Corning how to swim. So, again, she's putting bits of herself in the novels. And perhaps the most obvious is that Mildred Augustine loved flying, and she learned to fly, if you can believe it. She was a working journalist. She learned to fly when she was 59 years old. She flew her own Piper Cherokee, and she actually, and she's a little bit like Agatha Christie, the great British mystery writer who was writing, you know, Miss Marple about the same time. Both of these mystery writers loved archaeology, and so our Mildred Augustine learned to fly her own airplane because she got tired of hiring pilots to fly her into remote archaeological digs. Throughout her life, Mildred Augustine had 6 pilot's licenses, including one for seaplaning, which appears in Nancy Drew Mystery number 14 of The Mystery of the Whispering Statue. And in The Clue in the Crumbling Wall, Nancy herself becomes an experienced pilot. And so it's fairly clear. Mildred Augustine also was a great golfer. And you probably remember in the Nancy Drew Mysteries, Nancy herself is a great golfer. And one of them, I'm trying to remember which one, she wins a tournament with a broken hand. I always love that detail.
Okay. So we have them writing the books, and Mildred isn't able to say that she wrote them. What changed? What happened so we were able to find out about Mildred?
Well, it's a very moving story, I think, for us in the Midwest because of this secrecy. And what happened with Mildred, she was a working journalist. She had a master's degree in journalism, and she married a reporter for the Associated Press, and his name was Asa Wirt, W-I-R-T. And they got married and moved to Toledo, Ohio. But in 1940, they had a daughter, and in 1940, they'd just been married 8 or 9 years, and he began to have a series of strokes, and so he was very ill. And so here they had a daughter. He couldn't work. Mildred, you know, was the breadwinner and also the nurse, and so she's writing these Nancy Drew mysteries, and she began to write other young people's stories under a great many different pen names. And so I'd like to hand out, and it's actually from a wonderful book by the Library Association. Mildred Augustine wrote more than 130 different young people's books under a whole bunch of different names. And she said at this time that she would put the typewriter beside her husband's bed when she was nursing him in the 1940s, and would, in between nursing him, she would try to write, you know, whether it was Nancy Drew or whether it was the Dana Girls, or she loved the Penny Parker mysteries because Penny Parker was a journalist. So she'd be writing these stories, and she said to one interviewer, if my stories sounded tired, it was because I was tired. And I tend to blame Harriet Stratemeyer. I just think, couldn't she have helped Mildred a little bit more at this time when, you know, she was rich with Nancy Drew and Mildred was struggling in Toledo, Ohio, trying to raise her daughter and nurse her husband. But in any case, Asa Wirt died in 1947, and so Mildred was a single mom raising her daughter as a journalist, and she was writing for the Toledo Blade, and she met after 3 years, or fell in love, I guess, with the editor of the Toledo Blade named George Benson, and they had 10 wonderful years together from 1950 to about 1960, and then George Benson had a heart attack and died. And so for the last 40-some years of her life, she was a widow like many women. And but so throughout her life, she remained an inspiring role model for us all. She was flying, she was golfing, she was raising her daughter, she was writing her column for the Toledo Blade at the age of 96, if you can believe it, when she died in 2002. So I think she's inspiring to us all through her life.
Yes, I think she really was, down to her last column where she talks about the importance of libraries. I've been putting a couple quotes from that column on Facebook this week to tell people to listen tonight. So,
isn't it?
She really was an inspiration.
And that she was writing about that. I have that right here. She wrote, "I consider it an honor to have been born near the turn of the 20th century at about the time when public libraries were first coming into popular use." And I love the fact that the name of her column that she was writing, if you can believe it, up until age 96 was called On the Go. So that continues to inspire me, too. And I am pleased to say that fame is slowly catching up with her. You know, Nancy, her heroine, had immediate and ongoing fame, but in 1993, Augustine reached an agreement with Simon & Schuster under which she's finally given credit for writing the original stories. And so since 1993, Augustine is acknowledged in all the printings of the 23 books she wrote, including all the translations. And they have this statement on the copyright page. It says, "Acknowledgement is made to Mildred Augustine Wirt Benson, who, writing under the pen name Carolyn Keene, wrote the original Nancy Drew books." Finally.
So, and it took
so she's
a long
getting
time.
It did. Yeah. And there was a kind of interesting movie, a made-for-TV movie about, I don't know, 2003 or 2004. It was a Nancy Drew on campus film, and at the end it saluted Mildred Augustine, and I was very much touched by that.
But it started to come out in 1980 when Harriet Adams switched publishers, right? And there was a lawsuit?
Harriet Stratemeyer Adams finally let go after 50 years of trying to move Nancy farther east toward New Jersey and kind of trying to camouflage her Midwestern roots. And what happened was that in 1979, Harriet sold the rights to the Nancy Drew books. You know, she was getting old herself, and I think she died in 1982. So she sold the rights, and it was at that time, because Grosset and Dunlap, of course, didn't want to lose rights to these, you know, very lucrative books. And it was at this time that there was a lawsuit, and Mildred Augustine was called and testified, and that's when the real authors' names came out.
Well, and it took a long time from there till 93. And there was actually a conference, which is how I found out about her, at the University of Iowa, and it was, there were people from the library involved in the conference. I don't know why none of them said, you know, "We're having this conference, Sarah, I think you'd be interested." And by the time I found out, it was the day before, and I couldn't get anybody to switch, so I didn't get to go, which I'm very sorry about. But because of that, I decided to write to Mildred Wirt Benson at the Toledo Blade. I've looked up the address and at the library and wrote her a letter, and she must have liked my letter because she answered me, and I've talked to one of her relatives, and she said that she didn't answer everybody, but I told her all about how I was always upset with my mom because she had 10 years. She could write Laura Ingalls Wilder, and she never did. So I was not gonna have that happen to my kids and then find out that I could have written Nancy Drew's author, and I didn't. So I wrote her a letter, and she wrote me back, and she said, your letter about the Nancy Drew stories I wrote reached me, and I do appreciate your kind words and memories. Thanks a lot, Mildred Wirt Benson. And that's one of my prized possessions, that I actually have a letter from the real Carolyn Keene, who's about as close to a real Nancy Drew as we're going to find.
Oh, I envy you. How wonderful. Right. I've read that exactly, that she wrote so many other things, too, and that she kind of got a little bit tired of people mentioning Nancy Drew, but she knew she had contributed something really to young girls reading across the world. So I think she knew and felt good about it.
Yes, I do. I don't know all of her pen names, but when I do see a book that says Mildred Wirt or Mildred Wirt Benson, I buy it. And I've got about four of those now to add up.
I do, too. And there's Ann Wirt. If you see anything by Ann Wirt, that's hers, too. And I've got one called The Secret of the Sundial. But she also wrote under her own name some of the Brownie Scout mysteries. So that's, I have one called The Brownie Scouts at Snow Valley and The Brownie Scouts at Windmill Farm. And those are by Mildred A. Wirt. And so she has a whole bunch of different pen names. And so people might want to collect them if knowing that this is, you know, the author of Nancy Drew.
Well, I keep an eye out, so whenever I send, you know, a used book call to me, it's really sad. I spend more money on old books, as my grandmother says. Well, what do you want those old books for? Well, they're great. I really like them. So, while we're talking about books, besides books by Mildred, is there any particular, you mentioned the Nancy Drew scrapbook, are there any other books? I know there's actually kind of been several kind of academia-ish books about Nancy Drew. Are there any that you'd recommend?
Well, I'd love to recommend the book that came out of the conference you mentioned at the University of Iowa, and it's called Rediscovering Nancy Drew, and it's edited by Carolyn Stewart Dyer and Nancy Tillman Romilov, and it's from the University of Iowa Press, and I hope they still have some. And there are all sorts of essays from people who were at the conference. And what I particularly like to call to their attention, because I had the joy of meeting this artist at the conference in the early 90s, was a Hawaiian printmaker named Laura Ruby, who is wonderfully talented and very funny and a huge Nancy Drew fan. And Laura, on the cover of this book, you will see one of Laura's prints. And what Laura Ruby has done is she's created a brilliant print for each of the first 46 Nancy Drew mysteries. And each one of them is a mystery. Have you seen any of these at all, Sarah?
The one on the cover, only the one on the cover of the book.
Right, right. Well, each one is different, and they're all, Laura is so funny herself, and she said she was kind of taken, well, kind of pulled toward Nancy Drew because of her name, you know, Drew being the past tense of draw, because Laura's an artist, you know. And so each of them, and art being kind of a mystery, you know, like when you're looking at a painting, you're kind of trying to figure out what's going on in the painting. Well, each of these prints that Laura's made, and people can contact her on the web, is a kind of mystery, and you can find yourself looking, and you'll see the silhouette and the magnifying glass, and often she uses the texture of the blue covers. And anyway, so I would recommend Rediscovering Nancy Drew, just if not for the wonderful essays inside, just for the intriguing cover drawing by Laura Ruby. But another book, if people are really interested in these two women, a woman named Melanie Rehack, R-E-H-A-K, wrote a book recently called Girl Sleuth, Nancy Drew and the Women Who Created Her. And it's really about Mildred Augustine and Harriet Stratemeyer Adams. And what Mildred Rehack was able to do, and I guess it came out in 2005, she was able to read some of the correspondence of the Stratemeyer Syndicate, and so she really gets insight into what was going on with both Mildred and Harriet. And she tries to be very even-handed and really presents both women as admirable women because, after all, Harriet Stratemeyer Adams did run this syndicate after her father died and, you know, was certainly a remarkable woman in itself. So people who are interested in those two women might be interested in Girl Sleuth, Nancy Drew, and the Women Who Created Her. I tend to be a little partisan toward Mildred and wish Harriet had been a little bit more generous with both the money and the recognition to Mildred during her lifetime. But there is so much memorabilia, and I think that shows what an icon Nancy Drew has become. So if you're a big Nancy Drew fan, you can, you know, own the license plate and the lunchbox and the cameo and the there's a game that's very rare, a Nancy Drew board game, if people can find it. And there are all sorts of websites. And I have a little book that's called Nancy Drew's Guide to Life. Have you seen that? So there's the Nancy Drew cookbook. And so there's all sorts of, there are video games.
I was always bummed that Nancy Drew got a cookbook and the Hardy Boys got a detective guy. So I actually got both of them. So
I know, and poor Nancy. I mean, Nancy really didn't cook much. She had Hannah Groon, the cook who came in. And I should say, if we have just a few more minutes left, I don't want to say that the Nancy Drew mysteries are perfect, because when we read them today in 2011, I mean, it's very clear that Nancy was privileged. You know, she had her own roadster, and, you know, she had the cook who came in. In those early books, and this is true of all the Stratemeyer series books, they often use stereotypes at that time. So if they're a policeman, they're usually Irish, and sometimes there'll be maids or caretakers who are African American, talking a kind of embarrassing dialect. And
The dialect is pretty bad.
Right, and people start to notice that, you know, in the 1940s, and so that's one of the reasons they redid them. And so they kind of took in the yellow books that a lot of people, the yellow Nancys that many people grew up reading, you know, the icebox is now a refrigerator and the roadster is a blue Mustang convertible, but they've gotten away from that. So that's one good thing Harriet did, but she also dumbed it down. So,
well, we are about out of time. There was some stuff I wanted to get to that we didn't, so maybe we'll have to have you back again.
Well, thank you for having me, and someone should do a Nancy Drew, Laura Ingalls Wilder comparison or something as traits of heroines.
Well, I think they probably could, and I'm going to go ahead and put you in back in the green room, Barbara. But
okay.
Thank you so much for coming tonight. I really appreciate you letting me interview, and I think we did a really interesting show, and we'll have to try and talk Nancy Drew some more.
All right. Thank you, Sarah. Bye-bye.
And I want to just make sure everybody knows that Barbara is available as a Humanities Iowa speaker, like I am about Laura, she is about Mildred. So if anybody is interested in having Barbara talk, you can find out about that on the Humanities Iowa
website, or if you want to find about me, it's also on the Humanities Iowa website. And this is a little bit of a variation tonight, but I was really glad we did it because I grew up loving Nancy Drew, and I think probably a lot of you did too. So thank you for joining us. And I don't have firm dates for anything in June yet, but keep an eye on the website. And you can also follow me on Twitter or join me on Facebook, and I'll let you know next episode coming up. So thank you very much. Good night.